Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, the latest geek culture news, and whatever movies, TV, and other pop culture is on our radar for the week. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. All right, it is our March podcast, and we have no comics this week.
Right.
Well, that's not true. We'll have comics this week. We have no comics while we're recording.
Right. I'm going to call this the Rage podcast.
Yes. So this is another one of those weeks. You guys have heard us gripe about this before. Diamond just last minute sent us a lovely email on Monday. Hey, by the way, you know, you're getting your comics still a day late, which means, again, should be invisible to all of you. But
means rescheduling.
We have to reschedule everything last minute, and we have to pull all our comics. Usually we have a luxurious 3 or 4 hours, and there's no particular time pressure. And
instead we'll do it in about 45 minutes.
Instead we got about 45 minutes to get it all done. So it's going to be a little hectic. So if you see us on Wednesday looking frantic or...
Bleeding from our ears.
That's why.
That's the condition Dave has.
That is also why we will not be covering comics on this podcast, because we don't have none.
Yeah. But what we could do is we could look at the list and guess.
And guess? Sure.
Just be like, I think I'm going to like this issue.
I feel that's pretty fair.
Or here's a new title. I don't know anything about it, but I'm not feeling the name.
So we won't be doing that. But we will we'll have 2 weeks of comics coverage next week. And
we have sexy topics this week.
So we're going to start with the news, as we always do. So this Saturday, we've got Gaming with Rogues, DC Deck Build. Game.
Yep.
That'll be on Saturday, March 19th, and it'll start about 6:30. Mm-hmm. Run till we close at 9 o'clock.
I believe that's Chris Jones's birthday.
That is Chris Jones's birthday, who runs it for us. He might bring a cake or cupcakes or someone like that.
Or at least pat the guy on the back.
Yeah.
Say, hey, old man.
And maybe, you know, maybe let him run around. Or not.
Or for once.
Or crush him.
Yeah.
And then say, happy birthday.
Or punch him in the face. You know, it's fine.
Whoa.
That escalated quickly. Our Ladies Night was originally supposed to be tonight as we record this, but has been rescheduled for next week, Tuesday, March 22nd. So that will be starting at 7 o'clock, running until about 9 o'clock on Tuesday, March 22nd. Then in April, on Sunday, April 3rd, we'll have Magic the Gathering Shadows Over Innistrad pre-release. We'll have 2 rounds as always. If you want to come out for that, please sign up in advance. It's always good for us to know if we've got enough room. Usually we have. We've been having enough room for walk-ins lately. So, mm-hmm. Then on Tuesday, April 12th, we'll be doing the restart of Reading with Rogues, our new bi-monthly Reading with Rogues.
Yes.
And that'll be we're going to talk about Dark Knight Returns, talk about Descender,
yes,
and whatever else people want to talk about. It'll be sort of our comics talk.
Yes.
People will bring comics that they want to talk about.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep, we encourage you to bring a graphic novel or two.
Small us.
Yes, please do. And then we have on April 30th, we have International Tabletop Day. We are still firming up the schedule, but we do have a list of games. They're going to be live streaming Tabletop Day all day. They're going to be playing Will Wheaton will be playing, and Felicia Day, and guest stars, and that kind of thing.
Where are they live streaming from?
Wherever their headquarters is, a bunker.
Secret superhero type headquarters.
Secret gaming bunker. But
you go in, you touch the statue of Gary Gygax, you descend down a pole. descend down.
I feel like none of that was appropriate.
touch the Gary Gygax, slide down the pole.
So we haven't set up our schedule yet. We don't know which games we're going to do, but the games they're doing, the ones you've heard of, are Super Fight, Epic Spell Wars, Machikoro, Red Dragon Inn, Boss Monster, Star Realms, and Castle Panic.
That is a good lineup.
And we'll be trying to run all those. There's a few others that we have not necessarily played that may or may not go in ours. There's something called Schmovies, which I couldn't find anything about.
As in movies, Schmovies?
Yes.
Okay, that sounds like it could be fun. I like movies.
There's a new game called Drunk Quest, which is a it sounds like a drinking game.
Yeah.
We probably will not be playing that one in the store. there's Birds of a Feather, which looks like a game about bird watching.
Okay.
Supposed to be kind of fun. We'll probably be running that. A game called Heroes Wanted, which is a superhero game. A game called Tonto Kuri, which is a deck building game based on like anime maids.
Okay.
We may sub in DC deck building for that one.
I know that is a genre, but I don't know much about it.
Awesome Kingdom, which is a fantasy game by IDW, the same guys that published Machikoro.
Yep.
And then Don't Turn Your Back, which is the Evil Hat game that is sort of the psychological horror game.
Hmm.
So any and all of those may wind up in the rotation, as well as a few other possibilities. But we will have a schedule fairly soon, and there'll be, you know, prizes and
giveaways,
all kinds of cool stuff,
and high fives.
It is the biggest board gaming day of the year. It is the board game equivalent of Free Comic Book Day. Yep. We'll be going all out, and we are preferred partner this year, so we get extra bonus things, whatever that is.
What if people dressed up for this, like
Azumachi Koro?
Azumachi Koro, or if you came as like the robber from Settlers of Catan.
I came in as your favorite character from Red Dragon Inn.
Yes.
Yeah, any of that stuff.
This would all be okay.
If you do, I feel like you should just get a free game.
Sure.
Randy, I'm going to offer free games. Is that cool?
Sure, why not?
If somebody goes to the trouble of dressing up as the robber, that's just a domino mask.
That doesn't count. No. You have to dress up as an actual Machi Koro Town.
If you do that, Dave will buy you a game.
I will buy you a game if you dress up as a Machi Koro Town.
So, moving on to non-store related news, or at least not directly store related news. Uh-huh. First of all, there's some big comic news, comic and TV news I want to start with. It appears that the Riverdale has some CW. You know, they're doing the CW pilot for Riverdale.
Yeah.
They have cast newcomer Chip Zdarsky as Mr. Svensson. He's the guy who pushed the broom. It says here he pushed that broom, which he brought from home in his audition, and we knew he was the one. Said producer Greg Berlanti.
You know, I feel like things might be finally looking up for Chip.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. This news site is chipzdarsky.com. So
this sounds as this sounds like information as valuable as his Applebee's.
Yes, yes, folks. Exactly. Yeah, but in real TV news, we have Into the Badlands. It's getting a season two.
Right,
Nick. Did you wind up watching all of that?
I watched all of the first season. It was interesting, very anime inspired. Okay. So
was it post apocalyptic?
It was. It was very post apocalyptic, but in a world where sort of martial arts has become in the forefront.
It's definitely one of the possibilities if we have some sort of destructive apocalypse.
Sure.
Well, I actually assume, like, you remember that really weird apocalypse movie where it was a mishmash
Six
of everything?
String Samurai?
Doomsday?
Doomsday. Where there was, like, knights and...
And Road Warrior car chases.
Wasn't that Neil Blomkamp?
I think so.
Or no, it's not. It's not. It's the guy who did Dog Soldiers.
There were also, zombies.
Neil Marshall.
There were some sort of infected people.
Yeah, there was like a zombies thing, and then it kind of splintered into
different things. I did enjoy
Doomsday. Oh, I greatly enjoyed Doomsday.
I greatly enjoyed it, but I feel like that's what our Doomsday is going to be like. Everyone's going to create just a crazy
mashup.
Yeah. And
it'll be like the game smash-up.
Idiocracy, Max Headroom, Cyberpunk.
Pacific Rim.
Pacific Rim, Kaiju, Mad Max.
We're going to have giant monsters in mechs.
Sure.
Are we going to have Kaiju in cars?
Yes.
Mad Max style.
Giant Kaiju cars.
Dear God, those cars are huge.
They're monster trucks.
They are monster trucks.
You son of a bitch.
Okay. CW announced
what were we even talking about?
CW announced a bunch of renewals, pretty much everything.
Yeah, their entire lineup,
all the superhero stuff.
But, yeah,
DC.
Includes Legends of Tomorrow, Flash, Arrow, iZombie.
Supernatural gets season 12.
Yep.
So,
well, I mean, Flash is their number one rated show.
Yeah.
Beating out everything else.
Yeah.
So I believe that makes, if I'm not mistaken, Supernatural becomes their longest running show.
Yep, it does. Yep. So here's the crazy thing. Supergirl got renewed.
Yep.
Flash got renewed. So all the superhero shows are getting renewed.
Yep.
Because they're doing just fantastic.
And the rumor has it that Agent Carter is getting a season 3.
That is the
rumor.
If
you went back 10 years, 20 years, whatever, that is not the tradition.
It's not the tradition.
The superhero shows last about 6 episodes and are canceled.
And are terrible.
And are Mantis. Sorry.
Or the Cape.
Sorry, Mantis.
Sorry, Cape. Sorry, not sorry. But yeah, so that's good news.
Well, I mean, they're all great shows.
Yeah.
In their own right.
I don't know about great. Not sure about Legends of Tomorrow anymore.
Yeah, you're falling down on it. I've got some complaints, but
I gotta catch up.
So you can complain.
No, because it will have a point and counterpoint because I'll like it.
I still think that they can redeem themselves with kind of picking up the pace a little bit.
Yeah. I still like it, but I don't love it.
I feel like they
some variety besides the fight Vandal Savage, runaway, fight Vandal Savage, runaway.
I feel like they would be better served by making it sort of an exploration of the DC universe.
Yeah, and I agree.
Just going to all different kind of realities, make it an Elseworlds show.
I thought it was going to be more like 52 kind of thing, and instead it's a really kind of a low-budget version.
Well, you know what might be interesting? And like, I don't know if they're actually doing anything like this, but if there was like, you know, Vandal Savage was setting up some sort of time ripples or something like that that would empower him, you know, in a millennia, but that would require them to go back to the Old West and meet Jonah Hex and stuff like that, yep, because they had he had suddenly altered something that was screwing up Jonah Hex's time period, so they would have to go and put out fires.
I agree. That's what I would prefer.
Give him more story elements to deal with other than Vandal Savage, because while I like that character and I think the actor does a fine job with it, he's not like the biggest presence. No. I think he doesn't captivate the audience.
I mean, he's not as bad as the Ra's al Ghul, but he's also not as good as I thought he was going
to
be.
Right. Have they gone back any to create any crazy like Arthurian times with like the Shining Knight and the demon?
They haven't done. They don't have the money to do this kind of stuff. So all they're doing is they've done 70s, 80s, 50s, and one post-apocalyptic.
Okay.
And for the most part, here is every 2-episode arc. We found where Vandal Savage is. Let's go stop him.
We go up.
We go in. We screw up. We pair up in different pairings. We fight Vandal Savage. He beats us. We get back in the time ship. Kronos shows up. That is literally every 2-episode arc. And it's just not... Here's the other thing that kind of bummed me out. And this is a mild spoiler, but... you know how we got all those teasers, like the Mahunkle helmet and the Jonah Hex? They're in the background of a shot this week. And I'm like, is that it? That's all we're getting? Her helmet's like in the time ship.
Oh, really?
And he's got the Jonah Hex poster, like, tacked up, so it's just little background details. And I'm like, if you're not actually going there, if that was all you had, then you shouldn't have teased that as hard as you did.
No, that's pretty bad.
So that kind of irritated me, too.
If that is what it looks like.
Well, it seems pretty clear. Mm. I mean, who knows? We'll see. But I need to see me some Legion of Superheroes or something soon. Because I was kind of disappointed in their post-apocalyptic one, and I like post-apocalyptic stuff. And I have not been digging the last couple episodes as much. I still like the show, but it's definitely becoming...
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. territory?
No, it's not in the I wish they'd cancel it territory. But it is definitely becoming background viewing.
Well, I have some faith in Greg Berlanti and that group of people, so hopefully they can rescue it. I mean, they've done horrible things on Arrow, and they've rescued it. So,
yeah, that's true. That's true.
I can't condemn it just yet, even though I'm not having as much fun with it.
Yeah, I wanted it to be more fun. But Flash is still great.
Flash is still great. Supergirl is still fantastic.
Supergirl's still great. Yep.
And it's great to hear that's good.
And that crossover is coming in a couple weeks.
It's 2 more weeks.
Yeah, two more weeks. We'll get the Supergirl Flash crossover.
Which, yay.
I'm excited for that. All right. Other TV news. Mike Colton, the Luke Cage, he let the cat out of the bag that Luke Cage is premiering on September 30th.
We had to know the date eventually.
Sure.
But it did kind of get people... It kicked up a little bit of buzz.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I don't know if it's just because maybe the new comic has debuted recently, too, or people are just ready for this. They're just pumped. Though then, and there was also a little bit of news that I think that Danny Rand is going to show up on there.
Yeah,
at some point.
Yeah, people said that.
I feel like that's a given.
Yeah. But I wasn't sure about it.
To hear it confirmed is still an exciting thing. That means for sure we're about to see the first live-action teaming of Power Man and Iron Fist. Even if it's like they meet each other and they're like, I don't like this guy.
Yeah.
That you will see them on screen together.
We're also about to see like Misty Knight and all the other fun stuff from Luke Cage, so I'm excited.
Oh, yeah, Misty Knight and Colleen Wing.
I don't know. What's this announcement?
Oh, no, I mean, they just...
They cast Colleen Wing, right?
They did a casting call for Colleen Wing.
And we know that Misty Knight is going to be in Luke Cage. So we will get Nightwing Investigations.
And what is Black Mariah?
Are they going to want to bust out that name, Nightwing, when...
Probably not.
Wing Knight.
I assume that was actually a nod at DC when they did that. I don't know.
Although, how far back does it go? Nightwing was only created in, 1984 or something.
So, maybe not. Maybe theirs was first.
Yeah.
DC stole it from Marvel.
Yeah.
Well, they put out...
And then they whitewashed it and made it a dude.
No, wait a second. Wait a minute. But there was the original Nightwing and Flamebird that was probably, Silver Age or something.
That's true. That's true.
So, Marvel in your face.
Yeah.
For Iron Fist, they put out casting calls for Colleen Wing and Davos.
I don't know who that is.
The Steel Serpent. Okay. He's the big bad.
I don't know who that is.
Which they already teased in Daredevil.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. And Daredevil starts on Friday.
Yeah, but my watching buddy is going somewhere, so I can't...
Yep. You'll have to watch it without me.
It's true.
I'll be in Chicago watching it in my hotel room.
I just told my wife, be ready, we're watching that nonstop.
Yeah. All right, and then also a little bit of TV news, our buddy Jason Murphy, his show that he did with Brian Salisbury, Hacking the System, has come to Netflix.
which is really cool. I saw snippets of it and a few of the little exposés on certain things. And
two guys are great back to back.
They really are.
It's fun. It's a fun show. So
I'm excited to sit down and watch
it. It's worth taking a look at. All right. So this is normally where I'd say, hey, we'll be back with comics in a few seconds, but we won't. Because no comics this week. Well, no comics talk this week.
Right.
But we do have a special episode that is up on the site right now. It went up before this one. And that is our first part of our Last Best Hope special podcast. We did a playthrough of Our Last Best Hope with our buddy Jarek.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's a little indie RPG, which we have played before, but yep. Far enough back that it turns out we had to school ourselves a little bit on the rules again as we were playing it.
We played this between episodes 1 and 2 of this podcast.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was way back when. And there is a link in there if you want to hear that one. There are links to part 1 and 2 of that.
And the first one, as I recall, it was post-apocalyptic, and there were these giant sort of kaiju-type AI robots that we had to stop and involve time travel.
They were time-traveling robots.
Yep. And this game in general, by the way, is meant to mimic a like an Armageddon or one of those end-of-the-world type of things where a small team has to stop the end of the world.
Yeah, in the original one, we were an Air Force captain and a team of scientists.
Yep.
And when we recorded it, we mostly recorded a lot of the setup of how we decided how the world was going to be built and how we'd made up our characters and all that kind of stuff. This time around, we went the other way. We did all the setup off mic, and then we just recorded the story elements, which is a group of four superheroes trying to stop a renegade president who wants to cause nuclear annihilation.
Yep.
And we played that through. It is a big, bad, sort of Watchmen-esque kind of superheroics, end-of-the-world type
stuff.
Let's
just say we don't all make it out alive.
We don't all make it out alive, and there are several twists and turns. So part 1 of that is up right now, and we will probably do it in part 2 and 3 over the next couple weeks.
Let's just real quick, Randy, your character's name was?
Eclipse,
Nick.
Igaluk.
Right. Yep, you were a sort of a like a Native American Thor type of a warrior, you know, godlike warrior.
You're the god of the moon,
and I was Dr. Amygdala.
Yes, the Martian Manhunter type.
The Martian Manhunter type.
So go take a listen to that if you feel like you need more of our melodious voices this week. And we will be back in just a second to talk about movies and games and all kinds of stuff. So please stick around. All right, so we're going to revisit our movie challenge when we've been talking about.
Yep.
But before we do that, I was going to talk about some games that I played recently.
Yep.
I had a board game night, and I played a variety of games that I've already played, like Bunchy Koro and King of New York and all that. But I also tried out 2 new games. And one of those is a game called Sushi Go, which is a quick play card game. It plays in like 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of a passing game. Like, there's... The cards have things like sashimi, which are worth points. Just you put them down, they're worth points. Has wasabi, which you put down, and it triples the score of the next sashimi you play. And then there's a few other things you want to match. Like you want 3 sets of one type of roll. Or if you have the maki rolls, whoever has the most maki rolls gets 6 points at the end of the round, that kind of thing. But the interesting thing about Sushi Go is that it's a pass and play game. So you get a hand of cards. You pick 1 card. You all put it down at the same time. Then you pass your hand to the left.
Interesting.
And then you grab that hand and you put another card down. And then you pass your card to the left. So basically you can be doing a sort of a thing where you're like, oh, I'll play this card so the next guy doesn't get it because he's building up maki and I want to make sure I have the most maki.
Right.
Or you have choices of like, well, there's like 3 cards I want in this hand, but I got to play the one I know I want now.
Right.
So you may set up a strategy and then you get in a set of hands and you're like, oh, I need to do something different here.
Yeah.
So really quick play, quick to pick up, and a really good like in-between games. We played it while we were waiting for 7 Wonders to come open.
You know, I feel like there must be some like a little heat going on this game because yesterday, or I think it was actually yesterday, I had somebody come in and buy it earlier in the day, and then later in the day, somebody else came in asking for it. So I don't know if there's just like some general buzz in the air.
Yeah.
It's been doing well for us since it came out.
Yeah, we've been selling for a while.
But I've never like looked up reviews or anything on it. Yeah. But
I just did. It's at like a 7.7 on BoardGameGeek.
That is very high.
Yep. It's really fun. I really liked it. I'm going to have to pick it up as a sort of between game, as palate cleanser for me.
Somebody remind me to bump our minimums on that.
I will do that.
I think it's hilarious the amount of actual sushi games that are in existence.
At least 3 that I know of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wasabi, Sushi Go, and Sushi Draft.
Yeah.
There's also Bonanza.
Yep.
Not like the TV show.
Old school game, it's spelled differently.
This is a game that we've had forever. It's like one of these classics. And it is a game about bean farming.
Yep.
But it's super fun. It's a card game. You have essentially what is two bean fields, which means that you can plant two kinds of beans at a time. And this is another one. Here's something I've never encountered in a game. You have your hand of cards.
Uh-huh.
You have to play in the order you have. You can't move your hand around.
Oh.
So basically, on your turn, you plant the first bean in your hand, and you can choose to plant the second one, or you can hold on to it. And then you pull two cards out of the deck, and you put them face up, and then you guys try to sort of deal with the other farmers. So, like, if something comes up that you don't want, you can be like, hey, does anybody want this? And you can try to trade for it. Or you might just give it away to another player, basically giving them more points because you don't want to have to plant one of your beans because you can only have two bean fields.
Uh-huh.
So you have to plant them at the end of the turn. So if you have a card out there, you might have to, like, tear out crops before they're ready and not get the coins for them.
Interesting. That does sound cool.
It was a weird sort of... Like, it was cooperative, and where the person who was teaching it was like, I've never seen a game this cooperative. And I'm like, yeah, but it's not like... It's selfish cooperative. Like, we're not giving them the beans out of the goodness of our heart. It's because right. we don't want to have to deal with this crap.
But I do know, like, in other games, like, you know, say you're playing Settlers, and you want to trade some commodity for another commodity. I always do it kind of knowing, like, you know, like, trying to weigh, is like, is this valuable enough for me to give them something that might be more valuable to them?
Yeah.
You know, and how far along are they in whatever they're trying to do? So is it like that?
It's like that, but there's a little more pressure to sort of get rid of stuff.
Okay.
Because like in Catan, you can stockpile as much sheep as you want.
Right.
Now in this one, if you had sheep, you'd have to sacrifice your wood.
Right.
Basically.
Interesting.
So it's really fun. It's a type of gameplay I haven't played. And another one, quick to pick up, really easy to play. You play three rounds. Basically, you go through the deck three times, and the third time you're done, and then you count up everybody's score and see who farmed the most beans.
You know what I think is interesting about this, Randy, is it sounds like a very fun game. There are so many games that are great games that sound like the most boring games.
Oh, sounds boring as hell, yeah.
And, like, especially with the newer gamers, people who are just trying out Euro games or anything, like, outside of the standard American Monopoly and stuff, those can be very difficult sells.
Yep.
You know, like, I love Carcassonne. I think it's a great crossover game because it's so overall easy. And the devil is in the scoring and the details and stuff like that, and that's where it's really fun. But people are like, so I'm building a town. In 17th century France. Couldn't I be killing a dragon or something?
Or, say, making a Death Star, like a Star Wars thing.
Right.
Because that's happening.
I did hear about
that. There is a one-time printing of Star Wars Carcassonne coming. One-time printing. I just found that out. So we'll be ordering quite a few of those.
I'll pick it up.
I'm picking it up. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I heard about that, and I was like, that's a straight-up buy.
Yeah. Yeah,
but yeah, and you know, I understand that the notion though from people because when I was a kid, like one of the first board games I got that was out off the beaten path was Talisman.
Yeah,
and Talisman did offer pretty much everything I wanted as a kid.
Yep,
and it was essentially D&D as a board game and it even was Monopoly-esque, so
right.
it was not too hard to wrap my head around. But and I think I would have resisted Carcassonne too or something like Bonanza. But I would have been dumb to.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you can't know that until you try them.
Yeah, I will never pass up a game based on its concept anymore.
Right.
There's any concept can be fun.
Right. Agricola, with its Stone Age farmers or whatever, is a great game.
Yep, yep.
So,
it's all about the game design.
I have no interest in Formula One racing, but Formula D is a super good game.
Yep.
Yeah, like Splendor, which is...
Gem Merchants.
Yeah.
I had no interest, but it was a blast to play.
Yep.
I do think that you know, the Magic game for newcomers does tend to be something with both a cool theme and fun to play. So, like, the DC deck building game would be a great one.
Yeah.
Anyway. Just a little aside.
And we did one of our member benefits. If you're a Red Card member, we do occasionally do, like, a monthly benefit.
Definitely a reason to keep up with those emails and not just, like, you know, ignore.
This month's benefit was I ran a Star Wars Edge of Empire game. I read the beginner box set. It was fun. We basically it's out of the box set, so it's them going to try to escape Teemo the Hutt on Tatooine.
Yep, and because it's Edge of the Empire, that means that everybody in this game was like sort of people from the outer rim of Star Wars.
Yep.
These are not like rebel pilots and stuff like that or Jedi.
Yep.
They're just smugglers.
There was a smuggler. There was a Wookiee bounty hunter. Or no, there was a Wookiee enforcer. There was a Twi'lek bounty hunter, and then there was a droid.
Yep. And I was watching, by the way, that the starter set does look, the production values are beautiful.
Oh, it's great. There's counters for everybody. There's beautiful
the character
portfolios.
Have these beautiful paintings of, like, who your characters were.
Yep.
So And I was just watching the beginning of it when y'all were just getting going. But it's not. It looked really cool.
Yep. And they've got a weird dice pool mechanic, but I'm kind of getting used to it and kind of liked it. So
yeah.
We had a lot of fun. It's definitely recommended, especially those beginner sets. They're like $20-25 and give you so much material. You get a set of dice, you get four pre-gen characters, you get an adventure, you get a book to make more.
And so then they basically have sort of three of these starter sets. One is, like we were saying, the sort of the outlaw types.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's another one that is like the rebellion era, so it's your like rebel pilots and fighters and soldiers and stuff. And then, of course, Jedi.
Yep.
So you can kind of choose your area of focus. What would your players like to play?
Exactly. All right, moving on to movies. And I know Nick and I both have seen recent movies. We'll fold that into our movie challenge. So we talked about the movie challenge last week.
Yes.
Right. And just in case you didn't hear last week, just to recap,
this is the thing that Dave does. Sometimes I have to nudge him to it because I always like doing it.
Yeah.
But it's March Movie Madness. It's 31 movies in 31 days.
That's the goal, but not really the goal. Anyway, that's the ultimate goal if you can pull it off.
The goal is just to watch some movies.
Yes.
And it works for me because I don't watch a ton of movies. I watch a ton of TV. And this sort of forces me to think, oh, I'll watch a movie tonight. So I'm at 14 of 14 days so
far. That's pretty good.
I'm keeping up way better than I usually do.
You know, I ran into our friend Casey yesterday, and he is only on like 4 or 5. And he's like, I'm behind. I'm going to work on it. But it's still like 4 or 5 movies he probably would not have seen otherwise. And that's sort of part of the thing is like, if that's all you get around to, then that's all you get around to.
Yeah.
But we do try and we have little categories.
Yeah, there's 6 categories plus one bonus little one documentary category. The categories are posted on last week's podcast. So if you haven't, if you don't want to see those, you can go back and check that out. But last week we talked about a bunch we were watching. Since then, I've watched a bunch. You've watched a bunch. Nice, watched a bunch.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I will say that if anybody wants to, you know, even if you're not in this particular group, all I do is set up a Facebook group, get some friends to join. And I knew I had a lot of movie friends, so it was not hard to find people. And tell them what the first post is. Like, here's what the categories are. And then, you know, usually you want to post it a few weeks before it starts, or in my case, the day before.
Yes, the day before.
It was a little bit early, but that's why I'm flying by the seat of my pants with my choices. And then, you know, people just post about what they saw, and they'll say, like, you know, whether they liked it or not, and, you know, what they thought about it.
And I like to make a list and then change that list as I go on.
Yep. It's that's the nature of the challenge.
Yes. So I have watched, let's see, of the movies I've watched, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have watched 8 new movies.
Wow, I've only seen 4, I think.
And I believe of those, I had seen all but 4. So I'm half and half. Again, I'm about half and half movies and rewatches.
I believe mine is entirely new.
And Nick, you're trying to go mostly new too, right?
I have entirely new except for one.
Okay. So the movies I saw at the theater, I went and saw Zootopia.
Yep.
Which is the new Disney animated, and it's great. It's really, really good. It's got a great voice cast. And it's really interesting because it's talking about racism, but in a way in which no one can do the immediate, I'm not racist, like, backlash reaction to it.
Right.
Because basically it's all about different species of animals living together. So there's stereotypes about predators and stereotypes about bunnies and stereotypes about all this other stuff. And there's talks about, like, how the, you know, well, somebody calls the bunny cute and she's like, oh, listen – but other bunnies can call each other cute, but when you call us cute, it's kind of demeaning.
Right.
And they're like, there's the predators who are like, oh, you know, eating other minerals is in their nature.
Yeah.
This kind of stuff where there's parallels to be drawn, but at no point is there a one-to-one.
Right.
And as a result, it's able to do pretty sophisticated talk about race and racism.
That's an interesting line to walk. So I don't know anything about this movie. Yep. Like, I haven't even seen, I don't think I've even seen one trailer, and that's probably because I don't watch a ton of TV
stuff. So all the teasers were good little funny bits about the lead rabbit and the fox. It's a buddy comedy in a way.
Okay.
And it was all sort of about their nature and how they interact and that kind of thing. It doesn't give away anything about the story, which I love.
Okay.
So I don't want to say too much about it, but I will say that the basic thrust is that our lead bunny character, voiced by Jennifer Goodwin, who is great, reminds me of sort of Amy Poehler's character in Inside Out, very upbeat and chipper and that kind of thing. She is this bunny. She wants to be the first ever bunny cop.
Okay.
And they're small and they're timid and that kind of thing. And her being, and her parents want to be a farmer, but she becomes the first cop in Zootopia.
Huh?
And she has a run in with a fox who's sort of a hustler.
Okay.
Voiced by Jason Bateman.
Nice.
And she's sort of having to deal with the prejudice of foxes and rabbits and that kind of thing.
Right.
And getting past the idea that all foxes are sort of sly hustler kind of dudes.
Yeah.
And so it's a buddy comedy. It has a little bit of that, almost like an L.A. noir. It's like all about the city and the there's mysteries going on, and she's investigating a case she's not supposed to be on. And there's all kinds of like little cop tropes and private investigator tropes. There's some great pop culture references. There is one bit where there was a Breaking Bad callback that I don't think most people in the theater got.
Yeah.
And I was laughing so hard that my daughter turned and shushed me because I...
Oh, that's so cute.
It was great. It's really good. There's actually a super catchy song by Shakira, who is playing a singer named Gazelle. And it's actually part of the movie. Like, there's a reason that there's this pop singer in there. She's sort of making socio-political comments, and she's a character. But one of the reasons it's on my list was I wanted to go see Zootopia. My kids wanted to go see it. But I put it in my composers list. There was five movies by one composer.
Michael Giacchino,
who I've always liked. And so then I put four more movies from him in my composer. So what was interesting is that because I was viewing this as my composer, I was sort of trying to listen to the music a little more as I was going.
Yep.
And when I saw the movie, I thought, well, the music is okay, but it's not anything great.
Yeah.
And then I came home and listened to the soundtrack on Spotify, and I'm like, oh, there's actually like different themes and different moments where he was really accentuating what was going on, and it was a much better score than I gave it credit for.
Yeah, yeah.
And I probably would never have gone back and listened to it had I not been doing this movie challenge. Like, yeah. I would have just written off as, it's an okay score.
Right.
But it's considerably better than I thought it was, and now it'll probably wind up in my playlist and stuff.
That's
so
cool.
So that was kind of cool.
I also, by the way, everybody I know who's seen the movie has raved about it.
It's so really good.
It seems like... Nick, have you seen it yet?
No. I'm planning to, though.
I need to catch it.
So, Nick, you saw a movie that I'm planning to go see tonight.
Right, and I'm not going to go into spoiler territory because that would be mean, but this is 10 Cloverfield Lane. I will say it's a very claustrophobic film featuring three fantastic actors, John Goodman, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, and one other actor I'm going to blank on his name.
Jim from The Newsroom.
Okay. Of those, Winstead is the only one I haven't seen a lot of in like serious dramas.
Yeah.
So,
what I've seen her in from like Scott Pilgrim to there was another one she was she did the remake of The Thing.
Was she the girl?
Yeah, she was the main
not a reporter but scientist.
Yeah,
like, whatever. Visiting the Norwegian base. Yeah,
yeah. They're all fantastic in this film.
Yeah,
and
well, it's definitely like when you've got three actors in close proximity like that. Essentially, you have like a theater type performance
in a lot of ways. Yes.
Yeah.
And there's reasons for it. It's scary. The music is fantastic by Doug McCreary? Barry McCreary.
Yeah, who people may know from Battlestar Galactica, but he's scored a million things.
Done a ton of stuff. Yeah.
I might have to make him my composer because I was really impressed and sort of caught up in the music on this one. So.
Do you know, I believe he also did Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
Oh, did he?
Okay. He did something else notable that I was like, oh, it's here. That's kind of surprising.
I really, really was... I loved this film. I thought it was... it hit all the right notes for me. And this director, which is a brand new guy, did an amazing job with the story. And, you know, there's some J.J. Abrams to it, but...
Yeah.
He
didn't direct it, right? He's just producing it?
Yeah, he's just producing it. It's sort of... It fits into his Cloverfield world-ish type thing.
Yep.
But you don't have to have seen Cloverfield to watch this.
God, no.
Because I've seen lots of people asking that question, and I'm like, I hope not, because I only saw like half of Cloverfield.
No, you don't need to. However, I wanted to rewatch Cloverfield.
Interesting.
And that was my rewatch.
Yeah.
So that fit into my... then I basically watched that, and then the next night my wife and I watched Cloverfield.
And had a pretty decent time with it?
My wife couldn't watch it because she has what Randy has.
The motion sickness
thing really gets to her.
Yeah.
And that one is a particularly rough.
It's the worst. It's the worst except for like maybe Bourne Legacy, which also had me leaving the theater.
There is one movie, a horror movie from last year called As Above, So Below.
Yeah.
Actually has worse than Cloverfield.
Okay.
You think? I watched that one and it didn't bug me too much.
No, really? It really got to my life.
Maybe because I saw Cloverfield in the theater and the bigness of the screen got to me.
Yeah.
And I was watching As Above, So Below on small screen.
Right. But we watched Cloverfield, or I watched it, I guess. And I had a really good time. I haven't seen it since the theater.
Yep.
So it was kind of funny. The actors who were no one at that period of time are now a lot of people, like TJ Miller, who's in Deadpool, plays the guy who basically filmed the entire thing.
Okay.
And a bunch of other people that have been in small bit roles since then. I had a lot of fun with that, too, and I'd forgotten that it was the director of Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, yeah.
So he went on to do that, and I think he's about to do something else that's pretty big. So I like that J.J. Abrams is cultivating sort of these really good directors and sort of getting them their start and then moving them forward. So I have to hand it to him on that one.
Dave, I know you've seen nothing in theater. What's been your new thing that you've been watching? You watch everything new.
What's that?
You watch everything new.
Yeah, everything was new to me. Let's see. One of the ones I watched was something I actually saw. Like, everybody may know we're in the middle of a crazy contentious election.
What?
And Trump is the craziest wild card I've seen in my lifetime, to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything as bizarre as this election. And I saw an article mention a movie that they said sort of had some bearing on, like, his rise, and it's called A Face in the Crowd. Came out in, like, the late 50s, I think it was kind of a sleeper movie. Like, at the time, it didn't win a lot of accolades, but, like, since then, people have revisited it, and they're like, oh, this movie really had something going on. And I loved it. It weirdly stars Andy Griffith, who I always think of as, like, the most gentle, fatherly type character you can imagine in cinema, but is a complete bad boy in this. He's and does an amazing job with it. Actually, I didn't know he had it in him.
Yeah,
it's like a small town. I want to say is it Arkansas where they some local radio show is just looking to fill like airtime with sort of some human interest stories, and they go to the jail one day, and they're like going to talk to some people there, and he's in there like in the drunk tank. And he ends up having kind of this smooth line of patter. Like, audiences like him, and he's funny, he's quick-witted. He's definitely kind of egotistical, but he can play to what they want to hear. And he's a tell-it-like-it-is kind of guy.
I don't know how this could have any bearing on today's political climate.
The reporter ends up sort of, she kind of backs his plays and helps him, and as he sort of rises to, like, get his own show and stuff like that. And then before long, he's like got like a nationally syndicated TV show, which, you know, this was kind of during the boom of TV.
Yep.
So it has a lot of it has some commentary on that and how he's like, oh, he's like early on, he helped sell this vitamin or something like that. One of those kind of basically snake oil salesman kind of vitamins of the 50s. But it's clearly like a Viagra type thing. And they talk around like they're like. They show this like this chick in like a nightie in the ads for it because you see the ads that come out and she's like, you know, I bought a giant jar for my boyfriend. It keeps him going and going. And I was like, this was in the 50s. Anyway, and he knows how to sell stuff like that. It's his idea. And so he is like clearly like this narcissist, egotist, but like very, very smooth. She basically falls for him, even though he's really only in it for himself. And you see him as it reaches the point where he is informing politicians and stuff and really getting high on his power and getting into a dangerous place. So, again, I don't know if you can see any link to Trump, but it actually has one, believe it or not.
Huh, interesting.
Anyway, it was very entertaining throughout. It's super witty. He is actually wildly interesting to watch, even as essentially a villainous sort of role, because it doesn't really start that way. He starts as kind of this likable guy in a way who's, like, pulling one over on, like, the elites. And you can see like why people like him. So anyway, A Face in the Crowd is the name of the movie, and I can't more highly recommend it.
Oh, okay. All right. So one of the other categories I was trying to knock out this week, I was trying to get the Michael Giacchino, the composer. I'm trying to get all five of those.
I haven't even started
week.
My composer yet.
And the reason I want to do it this week is because I decided since I was seeing Zootopia, I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to make that my composer.
Yeah.
And then I kind of want to see all five in a row to sort of compare and contrast the musical scores.
Yeah, yeah, see how much variety he has in his scores and
so
all that.
So I could have watched a bunch of stuff I already loved. Like, he did Ghost Protocol, Mission Impossible, which are my favorite movies. And,
yeah.
But I want to kind of trace.
He did The Incredibles back in the day.
And The Incredibles. And Up. And all kinds of stuff. So, but I want to kind of stick to newer stuff and stuff I hadn't seen a bunch of times before. So I watched one old and one new to me, and then my last remaining are one completely new to me and one that I've seen once when it first came out like 15 years ago.
Right.
But the two that I've watched so far was Tomorrowland,
yep.
Which every time I see it, I like it a little less.
Yeah.
It's a flawed movie.
It's interesting, movies that are like that.
Yeah.
You know, I tend to somewhat more often find movies I like a little bit more each time.
Me too.
But sometimes there are movies that I'm like, I just start to spot the flaws.
Yeah. This was like that. It's really long. It's longer than you remember it being. And I also the score, unfortunately, was not great. It's sort of a, it wants to be a sort of a sweeping Rocketeer-esque sort of, and it is, it's sweeping and all, but it's not, there's nothing distinctive about it.
Right.
So that was a bit disappointing. But then I watched Jurassic World.
Yes.
Which you did the screen, which you did the soundtrack for. And again, nothing super notable about it.
Right.
But solid enough. But the movie itself was more fun than I was expecting it to be.
You know, I got the vibe that it was one of those movies where if you kind of somewhat turns your brain off, yeah, that it was that's the way to approach it. It's, yeah, like, it's a good fun movie.
It's dumb cliches. Like, the entire plot is dumb cliches. But it's amiably done.
Yeah. Well, some of the stuff you mentioned when you were reviewing it though, Randy, you mentioned stuff like, you know, I haven't watched it yet, so I don't know about this, but, you know, stuff like maybe military applications, yeah, for them coming
military
up
applications and, of dinosaurs was like, oh, of course.
And I was like, that seems like a cool idea that has, yep. I don't know how big it is in the movie or how important it is or whether they're just bankrolling
it. It's a side story.
It's a pretty notable side story.
Yeah.
But I was like, that sounded interesting.
And the whole notion of Jurassic World being like Disney World, it's like, I love the product placement in this, and that's a weird compliment to have, but
sure,
they actually had, like, Starbucks and Margaritaville and all that, so it looked like,
yeah,
this is what a Jurassic World would look like.
Well, yeah. And, you know, one of the things I like about the movie Contact is that, you know, they use real newscasters, yeah, and stuff in that, and, you know, lots of, it feels real to me because of how real world it is.
Right.
You know, and not product placement per se in that one, but they use a lot of real personalities.
Yeah. But this was,
add to something.
This was dumb, but it was fun. And I don't know that I'll watch it again, notably. And I'm also not a huge Jurassic Park fan. I like it,
yeah,
but I don't love it. So I wasn't like the target audience for this really. But if you want to see dinosaurs fighting dinosaurs, then you're gonna be happy with
this. Is your movie?
I was the target audience because I love dinosaurs.
Yeah, yep.
And I love Jurassic Park.
Yep. Yeah. If you love Jurassic Park, it is a loving update.
I think we talked about this, Randy. That, like, folks our age, like in their 40s,
yeah,
that, like, what Raiders of the Lost Ark was to us, say, yeah, in the early 80s, or, yeah, maybe some of the Star Wars movies or something like,
yeah,
that. That was, like, just jump ahead 10 years, and so people who are, like, in their 30s, Jurassic Park often was to them.
Right. Nick, what else? What else have you been watching?
I will talk about a female-led film because I'm trying to get that category kind of filled up.
Yep.
And this is a Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
Yeah.
Tina Fey-led biopic, sort of. It's about a book from a female journalist who was sort of given a chance to go to Afghanistan, and then she got sort of sucked into the life there.
And see, I did not know that this was based in reality. I had only seen maybe like
Kim
one trailer
Baker
for it.
Or Kim Baxter, I forget. But
that was something new to me from
the
interview.
She basically becomes sort of an adrenaline junkie.
Oh, okay.
And gets into sort of more and more outlandish things because she needs that high, which is interesting. And Tina Fey does a very admirable job with it. It doesn't have a great overall story because it's sort of meandering in a lot, mm-hmm, of ways.
Sort of like life is meandering.
Yeah,
so it's
but
meandering.
Her and the few people that it surrounds, and that includes Margot Robbie as another a journalist over there who's sort of friend but also kind of rival.
I heard a great segment on just a clip from that on the radio where she's talking about, because Margot Robbie obviously is hyper attractive, she's talking about how she's assessing, like, Tina Fey saying she's like back in America or whatever, you're like, what, a 6 or something,
yeah,
like that?
It's the
she's like, over here, you're like a 10.
yeah, it's the
And she's like, what does that make you?
And she's like, well, I'm a 14.
Yeah.
So is this a comedy?
And that's what I was wondering.
It's a dark comedy. I mean, it very, very much fits in sort of the dark comedy.
It sounds pretty heavy
realm.
Drama, though.
There is some drama in there, and it's sort of her finding herself a little bit, and the ultimate realization that her life is not what she wants it to be.
Interesting.
And sort of the relationship that she has with another kind of adrenaline junkie, a journalist that Martin Freeman plays.
Hmm, okay.
And Martin Freeman plays a Scot that's
okay
over there. He's a photojournalist. And he is hilarious and a womanizer, and he just is... He plays his part perfectly, but there's a lot of substance to him. So overall, I was very happy with the film. Again, I don't know if I can really say it was an amazing film, but it was very entertaining.
Okay.
So I was very happy. I like Tina Fey.
Yeah.
Everybody does.
Yep. I also am doing female-led. Dave, have you done any female-led yet?
I midway watched my first Lars von Trier movie last night when I was on a weird sleeping schedule. And so I watched his movie Melancholia, or half of it, with Scarlett Johansson in the lead. And this is the one that has a weird background sci-fi premise.
Okay.
And another planet is going to come by our Earth and may hit us or may not. But that is, like, as background as you can possibly get. It mostly seems to be about sort of this strange doings at a very uncomfortable wedding. But that is, as it jumps around a little bit between a few different character stories, that is there in the background.
Huh.
That the Earth may be destroyed.
Well, that's weird.
And if I had to guess, it's going to, that somewhat works as the metaphor. The approaching planet may be, you know, is like the commitment or whatever. And I don't know quite, I've never seen his movies before, and there is this kind of dreamlike quality to it. So I don't know how it's going to play out, but I will say I found it very compelling.
Interesting.
And an amazing performance from Scarlett Johansson, the best I've seen from her.
Interesting, okay.
So I'm enjoying it so far. We'll see. I'll report more next week on the specifics, though.
I also watched a Scarlett Johansson movie in my female-led movies.
Yes.
That movie is called Lucy.
different category.
It is the biggest piece of shit I've watched in a long time.
This is the
hated this movie.
From our formerly awesome...
It's Luc Besson.
Luc Besson.
It's the guy who did Fifth Element and The Professional.
Yep.
And he's made a lot of crappy movies.
That's pretty much what he's made since Fifth Element.
You know what I feel he's a little bit like? He's a little bit like the Euro Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Like I like some of his instincts and his action movie quirks. Even in a bad movie can still be good. But his earliest stuff was really the only really great movies.
Or John Woo.
Yeah, it's true.
It's so terrible. And I don't want to spend too much much time on how terrible it is, but it's so terrible that I have to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is to say, the premise, which if you ever saw the trailers, was it's sort of a Hong Kong actioner a little bit. Lucy is this girl who's in, I believe, in China. And she gets kidnapped by this drug smuggling ring. They have this new crazy mind-expanding drug. They package it up. They insert it into her stomach, like along with four other people. I'm not sure why they just can't hire drug mules, but apparently it's better to kidnap them.
Well, nothing's less conspicuous than somebody who doesn't want something in their body.
And threaten their families. Like, that is clearly, in this movie, that is a better way to get smugglers to go.
Okay.
And the notion is that this drug activates her brain, and this is done by way of showing us a professor played by Morgan Freeman, who talks about how...
If Morgan Freeman says it, Randy, it makes sense.
Yes, well, not in this case. Because what he says is, most of us use only a small percentage of our brain, but imagine if you used 100% of your brain.
Right.
And as anyone anywhere knows... Everyone at this point knows, apparently except Luc Besson, who wrote this movie, if you used 100% of your brain, you would die of a massive seizure. Because the deal is, it's not that you don't use 100% of your brain all the time. That's what it is. You use percentage part of time. It changes.
You say most people know that, but I don't think many people
know that.
But the...
general things that got out there in the public and has never really left it.
Well, it's stupid and it needs to die because when I saw the trailers, there was some fun action. She starts using like telekinesis and mind control and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, okay, you know what? This could be fun. Maybe they just mentioned that once and then let it go. No, it's throughout the entire movie. And not only that, they intercut like nature footage and all the and cosmic footage and all that stuff, trying to be sort of arty and smart, and it's more insulting.
Luc Besson has always had a little bit of artiness to him, and it sounds like it didn't come through on this one.
This is a terrible, terrible movie. Do not watch this movie.
And what do you really think?
I blame Nick for giving it to me.
That's harsh.
I gave you every movie that you're watching.
You did.
I will say that. I feel like I've definitely seen Luc Besson movies I don't like.
Yep.
But honestly, the percentage of the brain thing, if that's the buy-in thing, then I don't really care if they misuse it throughout the movie. If it's good action,
I think there could have been a good movie there.
If that was my only complaint,
yeah. How's the action?
Yeah, it's okay.
The action is just okay because there's really not a lot of action.
Yeah, it's weirdly. light on the action, and what does happen is, like, inconsequential. You don't care about the characters at all, so what happens to them is of no consequence.
Yeah, it's you're given very little background, you're given very little to care about them, so they come off as cookie cutter.
Yep.
Well, since you talked about a film you absolutely hated, I'm going to talk about a film that I absolutely hated, and I wish I hadn't watched it.
Yes.
And that is The Gallows.
Oh, yeah, I saw this.
It's a horror footage movie from last year?
I believe it is from last year.
And I kind of wanted to see it from the trailers.
It showed up on HBO Go. My wife a couple of months back was like, oh, we should rent it off of Redbox. And I was like, nah, we'll wait till it's free or something. It came up
still
free.
Still wasn't worth it?
No, God, it was not worth it. Basically, it's about a small town from like the 50s that put on a production of a film, and in doing so, there was a prop malfunction and someone hung themselves.
Right. I remember this from the trailer.
Yes. So,
and like that part seemed okay.
That part seemed okay. And then cut to present day. They're finally, the same school is doing a reproduction of the story. The theater group is. It's been sort of lobbied to be put back on. And then, of course, the lead guy is a jock who doesn't really want to do it, but's doing it because he's in love with the female.
Right, he's chasing the girl.
Chasing the girl, yeah. And essentially, it's so many cliches, back-to-back, followed up with just horrible shaky cam, horrible production value. I thought the ghost...
Well, what I remember from the trailer is that like it looked like it mostly took place in a darkened school at night.
Yes.
And, like, I was like, how do you have bad production values when it's a darkened school? I feel like anybody should be able to film that, right?
Yeah, you can, but it just, it's sort of like the choices.
Okay.
It's sort of the lighting choices, and the, it just looks cheap.
Yeah.
And I think that was
sort of... I suppose you could say that Blair Witch looked cheap, but I felt like that was to its advantage.
Yes, and that's sort of where it was. Blair Witch made it to its advantage, and felt believable in a sense where this one didn't.
Yeah.
And that sort of also falls down onto the actors and their ability to portray what they're doing. And most of it is ham-fisted. There's only four characters.
Yeah.
And all of them are kind of detestable in some ways because there's this common thing in horror films to make people unlikable.
Well, I mean, because part of that is...
The ghost is going to get them.
Right.
So it's like a jock who, picks on people and does that stuff.
Yeah.
And the twist ending, I saw a mile away, the monster looked... It's just a guy in a hood.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like, at least make it interesting, like something like Mama, or make a ghost actually look creepy.
Yeah.
And it just sort of failed on every front.
That's
so
a bummer.
Please, please don't watch this, even on HBO Go. Go away.
I haven't seen anything really bad, but I'll throw out real quick my one that I was... lukewarm on.
Yeah.
And that was Spike Lee's Chi-Raq.
Yeah.
Which is a portmanteau of Chicago and Iraq.
Fancy words.
Yeah, I'm Fancy Dave. This one was a interesting. I did not realize it was sort of a musical thing until I actually saw it. But I knew it was a remake of the famous Greek play that I remember studying in theater class in like college. Lysistrata from like 3,000 years ago.
Yeah.
but it still has a, one of those plays that's still performed today. And it's about all the women in this sort of town or community going on a sex strike. What's the word I'm looking for? Depriving their men of sex.
Yeah, sex strike sounds more sexy than it is.
Yes. And forcing them to give up war. So it's about sort of like the intersection of sex and war and. I guess there's gender politics all over the place in it. Spike Lee updates that to a gang warfare in Chicago, that's specifically when a kid gets killed.
Yep.
And this is a stylized thing like a lot of Spike Lee productions. There's some great stuff in it, including Samuel Jackson as the chorus, who kind of does these sort of spoken word rhymes about the themes and what's going on, and he'll talk directly to the audience, and he's great. I mean,
that's such a great role for him. That's what I loved about the trailers when he did it was him.
Yep.
I mean, when he does the voiceover in Inglourious Basterds,
yes.
It's such a memorable. It's like he's really good at that kind of thing.
Well, as I've studied Shakespeare and stuff over the years. When you do like a monologue in Shakespeare, they talk about the important thing is to A, make it sound like you're sort of saying the words for the first time, not like it's you're reading a speech.
Right.
And also to have these kind of highs and lows as if it was a story you were telling.
Yeah.
Again, it can't just be a flat delivery. Right. And like what they do, what Shakespearean actors do, Samuel Jackson does when he does monologues, yeah. too. And he's amazing at it. But the story is very preechy. It's kind of maudlin at times, even. There's an weird role for John Cusack as he's like the white guy preacher in an all black church. Mm-hmm. And there's no particular reason why that shouldn't be there, but he feels weird in that movie.
Yeah.
He almost seems kind of distant at times, even though he's got a big role in it. There's also there's slapstick in it. There's some sexy stuff. It's okay. I like the idea behind it.
It sounds like it's all over the place.
But it is all over the place.
This was disappointing to me because I really want to see Chirac. I remember seeing the trailers.
Yeah.
But yours is not the first sort of lukewarm review I've heard.
Right.
By the way, John Cusack,
yeah.
big Chicago guy.
Yeah.
That's probably why he's in Chirac.
Okay.
Because he came from Chicago. He's at the C2E2 this weekend. They call him, Chicago's favorite son.
Okay.
High Fidelity, I think, was set all around Chicago.
Well, he had that sort of thing where he didn't want to film outside of Chicago for a while. So a lot of his films actually got filmed.
He's like a Chicago guy, and I bet that's why he's in this movie.
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Weird, but okay.
Because that's the other thing about Chirac, I believe, is that it's supposed to be sort of about the violence and crime problem that's in Chicago specifically.
Yep. I will say I liked some of the stuff that they did where, you know, everybody speaks in a sort of either a sing-song rhyme and there's like heavy hip-hop tracks that are sort of laid over it in the beginning and the end and throughout. I thought as those parts of the experiment worked, I just feel like the overall movie is wildly uneven.
You watched at least one other musical, too.
Oh, right, right. And I watch an old-school musical. That's kind of one of the reasons I put this category in there, the five musicals.
Yeah.
So I watched Brigadoon.
The famous Gilbert and Sullivan.
Or so Randy thought.
Or so I thought, even though Dave had put the actual composers in his actual review.
Yes, it's Lerner and Lowe, who did Camelot and My Fair Lady.
Ballpark.
I'm generally speaking a musical fan, but I don't have super deep knowledge on them either. My mom loves them and grew up watching them. I don't think I had ever seen this one, though, and so I just kind of randomly wanted to watch it because the premise intrigued me, which is I knew it's basically two American tourists, one of whom is Gene Kelly, the dancinest guy of all time.
Yep, sure.
And this probably came out in the mid-50s, I think. I forget exactly.
Mm-hmm.
They're on tour in Scotland. They get lost on a path. They find this magical town of Brigadoon, which seems to be... You know, they're doing all this stuff from 200 years ago, but it's very quaint and picturesque. They, you know, beautiful markets and marriages are going on, and you know, nobody seems to really be. There's no major problems there, and so there's a mystery as to what the town is and what's going on and why. Of course, it only appears once every 100 years. They find, and then there's a love story because Gene Kelly is on the outs with his fiance, who you. Only see towards the end of the movie, and you kind of see why. It's kind of one of those. She has to be a little bit of a Medusa, so that you don't feel too bad about him finding a new Scottish lass,
right.
Which is sort of what goes on in this story. But it was a lot of fun. It's very very sweet movie because those guys write the lyrics. They're witty, of course, and they capture a certain longing to get away from the rat race of the real world to this sort of pastoral life. And there's a couple of great, even though it's more ballady, there's a few great showstopper numbers that are just super fun. Not my favorite musical, but very good. And if you're looking for that kind of, this is just a great feel-good movie.
What is your favorite musical?
That's a tough one. I really like The Music Man.
Really? I was going to put that on my list because I've never seen it.
Yep.
But I have to find a way to get a hold of it because it's not streaming
as
anywhere.
As you know, I love Chicago.
Yeah, I also love Chicago.
Chicago's amazing.
Chicago might be my favorite musical.
Yeah.
Although West Side Story is up there, too. West Side Story is great
really good,
music.
Really good. I think the thing that tarnishes the movie a little bit is that weird the casting of white actors.
The white girl
as Puerto Ricans.
Yes.
The kind of dusky-skinned makeup.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Unfortunately, that is an unfortunate thing.
But that is beautifully – it's also beautifully filmed in addition to having great score and everything. That opening scene where, you know, it's the dancing through the streets and all that stuff is amazingly filmed.
I also really like Grease, although I know a lot of people do not like Grease.
You know what's interesting? I've never seen Grease all the way through.
Okay. But you have seen Grease 2 several times.
Yes. That was what was in rotation on HBO when I was a kid.
I understand.
Michelle Pfeiffer. And I had a huge crush on Michelle Pfeiffer as a result of that
movie.
And
she needed a writer that was cool.
Yes.
Both Grease and Grease 2 are on Netflix, by the way.
All right. You need to catch one of those.
Nick, have you watched any musicals yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
I'm having a hard time with it because I've seen a lot of musicals.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to find some stuff I haven't seen.
So I, Dave, I'm noticing that one of the things you've done is you've watched a lot of movies from before you were born, like Brigadoon,
yep,
and Facing the Clouds, and Seventh Seal, which we talked about last week.
Yep.
This is the category that I'm having trouble with, because as you know...
And incidentally, by the way, those are falling into other categories, yes, for me. They're, yes, like musicals and stuff, but...
That's what I mean. You're actually seeing beyond... You're going beyond that category to more movies that are... Whereas I have a hard time with movies before, like, 1982.
Right. Yeah, and you've talked about this before.
I know, I just can't... Even like classic 70s cinema, like Martin Scorsese, who I love, Goodfellas, I can't get into Mean Streets,
but I mean,
or...
You have a fondness for, like, All the President's Men.
No, never seen it.
Never seen it?
Nope. I've seen 3 Days of the Condor, and it's slow for me.
3 Days is honestly slow for me, too.
I have seen...
You've
I'm trying
Taxi
to think
Driver,
of,
Randy?
Seen Taxi Driver, was not wild about.
Yeah.
You think you would like All the President's Men?
Probably not, based on all the other stuff I've liked. I mean,
yeah, All the President's Men is different. It feels more like you're watching almost a documentary, but I know it's also not your thing.
Yep.
But part of it is the leads in that are so good. Robert Redford and...
Dennis Hoffman. Yeah.
Dennis Hoffman. No, not Dennis
Hoffman. I don't remember who his partner is.
Dustin Hoffman.
Yes.
Yeah, I was wondering, Robert.
And they're amazing, and the editor...
Who passed away just recently.
Oh, man, he's been in everything.
Well, the thing is, like, it's not that I respect these movies. I know they're good movies.
Yeah.
I just can't plug in. I've always had this problem.
You're used to that post-Spielberg more kind of like, a little bit more, a directorial style that's a little more energetic.
Yeah, yeah. So even like, you know, I love noir as a setting, but I can't get into classic noir. So I tried rewatching a movie that I love the book. And that's To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yep.
And I found that I only liked it. Because
as a movie.
Gregory Peck is fantastic as Atticus Finch. Every second that Atticus Finch is in that movie,
yep,
is great. But the majority of the book and the majority of the story of the movie belongs to these kids. It belongs to Jem and Scout. And kid actors in the 50s were not up to the task.
You know, it's weird. You said that, but I have seen... some older movies with kids in it that I think are actually particularly good.
Really?
So I don't know if I completely agree with it, but there is a slightly... there is a certain stylization to the acting of the era that I'm used to.
I feel like it's the same as it is now. It's very hit and miss. Because there are some good ones, but there are also some really bad ones.
I didn't like most of the movie that was the kid-focused, and unfortunately that is so much of the movie. And I felt like that, like I say, Atticus Finch is perfect. Gregory Peck is fantastic in it, but the novel carries the story so much more effectively than the movie does.
I feel like I've seen it, but it's been so long that I don't have a strong memory of the movie.
Yeah. The other movie that Nick gave me many movies, but the one that I watched that wasn't sure about was Spy by Paul Feig.
Right.
Because I wanted to give Feig another chance because...
You haven't liked much of...
I didn't much like Bridesmaids, and I outright hated The Heat.
Right.
And with him doing Ghostbusters, I'm a little nervous.
Right.
But I love all his TV stuff. Like, he was an Apatow guy. He did Freaks and Geeks and all this other stuff I love. So I watched Spy, and I didn't love it either, but it's my favorite of his movies that I've seen. It definitely sends up the Bond movies very effectively.
Oh, yeah. It even has its own theme.
It's got a great theme. Melissa McCarthy is a lot of fun in the role. Rose Byrne almost steals the movie as sort of the bitchy villainess.
Yes.
And Jason Statham also almost steals the movie as a send-up of the ultra-macho spy who quits the agency and goes rogue.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. There's some really fun stuff, and I recommend it. It's not just a comedy. It's got some fun action-y stuff.
I thought the action is great.
Yeah, it doesn't quite have that blend of something like Midnight Run or River Hills Cop, where I think it was like, or even Running Scare, where I'm like,
you kind of take it seriously.
It's a good action movie as well. It's still pretty goofy.
It is,
but it's kind of fun. And anytime you get Melissa McCarthy, let her go off on sort of an improv profanity tear.
Yeah,
that's always kind of fun. And there's a couple of those in this movie. It doesn't always feel in character for her, but it's always fun to watch.
Well, I feel like there's basically improv. Everyone improvs.
Yeah, that's Feig's thing in Apatow too. They do these sort of improv movies, and sometimes it's like they let them go too long, and they'll put in a funny bit that doesn't belong in the story because it's funny.
Yeah, Allison Janney gets to have a lot of fun with
Allison Janney's great. Yeah, I forgot about Allison Janney. She plays the like deputy director of the CIA. She's foul mouthed. She's mean. It's kind of fun.
Yes.
What else have you watched, Nick?
I've working on my buddy movies as well, and I went with some odd ones. One was Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl.
Yeah, I was curious about this one.
That's an indie flick whose trailer, I remember, looked pretty good.
Yeah, the trailer was really good. It wasn't as compelling to me to that I was like, I need to watch this right now. And right. It showed up on HBO, so I recorded it and watched it. And I really, really enjoyed it. It is very Wes Anderson-like.
Okay.
So it's got that sort of charm to it. It's about
not necessarily that's a winning thing for me, as I've never fully plugged into Wes Anderson.
It's like a Wes Anderson light, because it doesn't have like his patter or his that. But it's about a kid who doesn't know who he is. He hasn't found himself. He doesn't know what he wants. So in order to sort of please everybody, he's kind of does only what he has to fit in with all the cliques in the high school.
Right, but so he's kind of this nobody person.
Yeah, nobody person. And it's sort of about him and his friend Earl. They are sort of on the same page. Earl is kind of the guy, the tough guy.
Yeah.
So he's his own person, but he feels more in common with this other character. They have a lot in common. So they're friends, and they make really bad movies. That's sort of their thing.
Yeah.
They make remakes of like movies, change the name a little bit, and it's like horrible production values and all this other stuff. But it's,
which, by the way, does sound like weirdly close to Wes Anderson.
Yeah, that's sort of the Wes Anderson element that
first
I was talking
movie,
about.
Yeah. First big movie.
Bottle Rocket.
Yeah. And then enters a young girl who's been diagnosed with leukemia. And the main character knew her during, like, kindergarten. And his mother, played by
Connie Britton,
sort of forces him to go see her and sort of cheer her up.
Isn't his dad Ron Swanson?
Yes, it is. yeah, he's hilarious, but he's also sort of he's a psychologist, but he's like a shut-in, so he doesn't leave the house very much.
Okay.
Connie Britton does a great job as the mom, but she's sort of kind of got some quirks as well. She's not all there. And then the young girl's mother is played by Molly Shannon.
Oh, nice.
And I actually felt this is a fantastic role for Molly Shannon. She got to sort of be a little more down to earth than she's been in some other films. She's very funny, but sort of in more of kind of a calm way.
Yeah.
And it's sort of this relationship that these three young people sort of create and sort of...
I remember the trailer... You know, made out, Nick, that although this is obviously, you know, when you throw in a dying kid, that there's a certain predictability of it. And the trailer at least made out that they was going to try and sort of maybe foil those conventions, or that it wasn't going to follow the stock stuff.
Right. There's some... I'm not going to spoil anything, because that's just mean.
Well, also, I kind of want to watch it now.
Yeah. But I was actually very affected by the film. I actually did cry,
Is it more drama than comedy?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I was curious about, because the trailer, and you said the Wes Anderson, it seems kind of quirky.
It is. It's kind of quirky drama.
Okay.
I did laugh a lot, but there is more sort of dramatic elements to it.
Is this still on HBO?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, I've been kind of keeping an eye out for it, so...
Yeah, I was very happy with it.
I may have to put this in my buddy list for next week. All right, what else? Anything else you guys want to mention?
I have one more buddy movie, and it's just short because I know we talked about it a long time ago on the podcast. But I finally did get the chance to see What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, yeah.
Which I had...
The New Zealander horror comedy.
Yeah, New Zealander horror. I had a blast with it,
it's really fun.
Expected.
Yeah.
I honestly thought... I don't remember his name, but the lead vampire, sort of the gay vampire...
Oh, yeah.
He stole the show for me. I was enamored with his character. He was hilarious. Sort of his relationship with the... he comes to New Zealand... his familiar sends him the wrong way, or like horrible postage, and like the woman that he's in love with is already involved with somebody else. It was just a hilarious story, and I also love Peter, the old vampire.
Yeah,
this kind of scary,
this ancient. Yeah, yeah.
Very much Nosferatu looking. Yeah.
Yeah.
What I remember and I want to I need to rewatch it is that. As with Flight of the Conchords, sort of also from, was it Jemaine Clement?
Yeah.
Who's among the writers on this.
Yep.
These guys do losers like nobody else. So a bunch of loser vampires in like a small town or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a very sort of dry sense of humor. Like it's not like, it took me a little while to plug into it when I was watching
it.
Yeah.
But once I did, it became amazing.
Yeah, and also I think they did a lot of good like world building in it.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Yeah, like it's... It's different from just like a spoof vampire movie.
Yeah.
They kind of have their own thing going
on. Well, they call it a mockumentary, and that's sort of a...
Yeah, that's true. I forgot it's sort of a mockumentary filmed in that style.
Of four vampires and their life in New Zealand.
And they're all roommates, essentially. They're like a slightly annoyed, petty roommates.
Yeah.
The people that are annoyed that you don't do the dishes when you're supposed to. It's been 5 years. God.
Yeah.
And you definitely want to be careful about when you open the window.
Yeah.
whether it's morning or
night. Yeah. Dave, anything else on your list for this week?
That's everything that I've done. I got a little bit behind right now. I think tonight I'm actually probably going to catch the Sergio Leone movie you had recommended, Nick, that was
for
one of the ones
For
a few dollars more that I had not seen yet.
Okay.
That will be filling in the first of my composers from Ennio Morricone. They got a huge backlog of titles that I can look through.
And I'm excited because Dave got from his brother the Thin Man set for me to borrow.
Oh yeah,
I'm gonna watch at least the first one.
Yep,
cool.
Because I've never seen it, and I've always wanted to. So.
Yeah.
A little glimpse of what Elongated Man and His Wife could be if they didn't put them through the Brad Meltzer blender in comics.
Yes. And then I have a couple more that I watched this week. I rewatched Man from U.N.C.L.E., which I think Dave talked about last week and didn't like, and I really liked.
Yeah, I can't remember if I like talked about it in detail, but it was simply that I felt that it was more flash than substance.
It absolutely is style over substance. I just happened to like Guy Ritchie's
style. You like
his
style, and I found his style boring.
Yeah.
Here, I thought actually the performance by both of the leads were a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Armie Hammer and Henry Lone Cavill Ranger are both great.
I did think that they were both doing a good job.
Yeah. And Alicia Vikander as sort of the femme fatale of the piece, in a way, the female of the piece. She's great.
Yep. And who I had to IMDb after I started watching it for a few minutes, and I was like, I know that voice. Yeah. And I saw she was in Ex Machina.
She's the robot. Yeah. But the thing I most noticed in rewatching this was how much Henry Cavill is charming and fun and light, and how much I wish if I'd seen this first, I would have been like, you can totally get that guy to play Superman. He kind of looks the part. He's got that sort of charm.
Yep.
And instead, they don't let him show any of that in the Superman movies.
Right. He seems like broody and. Like, in all the trailers, at least, for Superman and Batman, he looks angry and bitter. And it's not what Superman is.
And then also...
You're right, he could have been him.
Then also I rewatched Veronica Mars' movie, which was actually... I watched for the first time as part of a movie challenge in 2014.
Oh, that's crazy.
Because it came out at that time. Yeah. And I love this movie. I love the show. It is essentially an extended... it's packing a fourth season into one long movie, which I was fine with. So I understand why some people don't like it, but I loved it, and so that was fun to rewatch. All right, that was a long talk of movies and stuff. Hopefully that filled the gap in your life that our comics talk otherwise would have this week.
I want some other people to do this challenge because I want to see what other crazy movies and stuff they come across or what categories they do.
Yeah,
because you can do like post-apocalyptic movies as your category.
We should do an in-store one.
That'd be interesting. Yeah. I'd be down with
it. Post it up.
Make it do it among the rogue card members?
Maybe so.
Or just everybody?
Yeah, maybe so.
Just go crazy?
Yeah. All right, well, we'll be back next week. And until that time,
Yo, Joe!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating or review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.